Whoop, whoop. Good Thursday, everybody. Lakers are having the rare DeMarco morning game coming up in just a little bit. We're going to be with you till 9 o'clock, and then MT and Alan Slee. We got the pregame show, and then Michael and Ireland on the call for the game. It happened fast, didn't it, man? We went through, hey, are we ever going to have a season, to, hey, we got a bubble, to, when are they going to start, to, we're going to know who they're going to have in the playoffs by the end of Saturday or Sunday. That went by quick.
It sure did. You know, not knowing and being so, you know, caught up in everything that's going on and, you know, not worrying about basketball, to most of your attention being focused back on basketball, back on the Lakers. So, yeah, it happened fast, but really it didn't. It took a while.
Well, it's just, I mean, what is it? Let me look here. It's August 13th, right? Yeah. It's August 13th, which basketball is usually the furthest thing from your mind because the season's been over a couple of months. We still got a couple of months until it starts again. But right now we're just starting. The whole calendar, everything is just so upside down and inside out. It's hard to even kind of remember where we are calendar-wise because we just hit the pause button for as long as we did.
No doubt. I like early basketball. I like early sports. I like to roll out of bed and, you know, turn on the tube and there's something on TV I like to watch. You know, even if I just can't watch it, you know, if I'm doing other things, I like to have every TV in the house on that sport. I just love that. That's a great morning to me.
Oh, it's a great, but that's why being on the West Coast is the best, because football starts at 10 o'clock in the morning. You know what I mean? That I remember when I lived in Texas for a little while and I'm sitting there going, wait, I have to wait until noon for football to come on? What the hell is this? I can't imagine being on the East Coast and having to wait until 1 o'clock. It's like, what do you do for the first 6 hours of the day you're up? Come on, man.
Recover from the night before if you're in the SEC.
Yeah, no, that's true. That's a fair point. I take it all back. All right. Dodgers get a win last night against the Padres, DeMarco. They finally found their bats late in the game. Justin Turner with a 3-run home run. Cody Bellinger had a little bit of a flare double inside the left field line. Didn't hit it all that hard, but nice to see him get on the board. And the Dodgers just keep doing what they're doing, and that is they're just pitching lights out every single night. Even when the bats aren't going, they are still the team to beat because they just run one arm after the next at you. Tony Gonsolin last night, and then the bullpen did what they do. They still not hitting, but they're still winning games.
Isn't that the mark of a great front office, or at least a great plan? I mean, I wish I could say it's all, you know, related to the manager, and you have to give him a lot of credit because, you know, he's the one developing the team. But, you know, one will supplement the other until they're both firing on all cylinders. So pitching right now is a strength, and that's what's keeping you in it until you can chip away and find a way to get runs. But like you said, man, just and going back, this year is a World Series or bust for you, correct? With the Dodgers, is that where we are?
100%, yes.
100%. So, I mean, the pitching gives you encouragement, how the bullpen is performing, how your starting pitchers are performing. Eventually, when things return or regress to the mean or the due theory, these guys that aren't hitting are due to start hitting. When they start hitting, hopefully your pitching will be, you know, at least flatline or just as good as it is now. Like you said, then that World Series or bust mentality will come back into the forefront.
You know, you said something I think is so important. And you're talking about the front office and you're talking about Dave Roberts. That I really like Dave Roberts. I think he's a good dude. I think he's a pretty good manager. And I think that he's the right man for this job. I believe that to be true. But the hand of cards that they've given to Dave Roberts, he better not lose. You know what I mean? I mean, because what the front office has done is said, here's a full house, here's four of a kind, whatever you want to call it. There's a way you can lose if somebody comes up with a straight flush or something, but this is the hand of cards that you want because you have an embarrassment of riches. You're talking about a starting pitching staff where Clayton Kershaw is what? Your fourth best pitcher?
Wow.
Okay. Clayton Kershaw is your number four. You've got a bullpen where there is no bad choice, that when you go decide it's time to go to the bullpen, I don't care whose name you call, it's a pretty good call that all of these guys are rolling. You've got Kenley Jansen, who looks to be pretty sharp so far. I still worry a little bit about that velocity, but he looks clear. You look at the roster of guys that they have. You've got the reigning National League MVP struggling, but he's still the reigning NL MVP. You add Mookie Betts to a team. You add a guy like Max Muncy a couple years ago who's got 70 home runs in the last 2 years. Justin Turner is an all-star. Kike Hernandez can play five positions. Chris Taylor can play five positions. That there really isn't something that if I only had blank, they've given him every shot in the bag. he needs to make sure that they close the deal.
No doubt. Did Eric Spoelstra ever write a book? If he has, I'd like to read it, because it's kind of the same thing. You've got three of the best players on the planet all playing for you. You better win this, or it's all going to be on you. So I wonder if, you know, how does an Eric Spoelstra turn into a Phil Jackson? Phil Jackson mm-hmm. had a wealth of talent, but he did it multiple times. So it's no longer you had talent. There's talent with my talent is getting these guys to play together. So I guess Dave Roberts is in that same category. You're given all the tools you need to be successful, to win a World Series. Now, it's not that easy. You just can't try out a lineup and say, we're going to win it all every single year. There's some skill involved as being a manager, but, you know, if you don't get it done, it's all on you. But even if you do get it done this year, it's not, I mean, you're going to be happy. There's going to be a celebration, but it's almost a sense of relief, you know, not just that unbridled passion or just that happiness in being a champion. It's like, wow, God dang, I got it here with the best car. You know, I mm-hmm. had no choice but to win. You know, if Lewis Hamilton doesn't come in, you know, 1, 2, or 3, you know, Mercedes-Benz is up in arms. Imagine how he feels stepping in that car every single day. I've got to either win or place or look great, or, you know, it could be over for me in a heartbeat. They'll give this ride to someone else.
That's worked out, because I believe he's won every race he's ever entered. It feels like it. It feels like
he's got the best car, and he's a great driver, but you have to win. That's what the pressure of being in that car dictates.
And I think that's part of where we get to with Joe Kelly here. He went on Ross Stripling's podcast and was talking about a handful of different things, but they got into it about the Astros. And I want to read you one of these quotes from Marco, because I think this kind of encapsulates what a lot of people are feeling. And what Joe Kelly said talking about the Astros is, the people who took the fall for what happened is nonsense. Yes, everyone is involved. But the way that the sign stealing system was run over there was not from the coaching staff. They're not the head boss in charge of that thing. It's the players. So now the players get the immunity, and all they do is go snitch like a little blank. They don't have to get fined. They don't have to lose games. I think this is the crux of what the Dodgers specifically, but players generally, are so offended by. That the guys that did it, we know that AJ Hinch was involved. We know that the general manager, Jeff Luhnow, was involved. We know that there are some other coaches, you know, Alex Cora, were involved as well. But the Altuves, the Bregmans, the Correas, the Springers, the guys that were benefiting from this, got to win a World Series, get to call themselves World Series champions. And when it came down to time to punish people, these guys got nothing. And that's what's so offensive to so many of these guys. It's not that necessarily that they cheated, because, look, if we're being honest, athletes cheat all the time. They're always looking for an edge, whether it's performance-enhancing drugs or anything else. You know, guys are always looking for that next thing. But that they got away with it clean as a whistle, I think that offends them more than anything else.
Well, you know, is he railing against the men themselves, or just the fact that, since you won't punish, I will? It's like spanking your neighbor's kids. You know, your neighbor's kids have walked to your house, into your yard, and spray painted your house, and your kids and your neighbors, the parents, come over and give them a hug. Ah, Timmy's just being Timmy. Well, sometimes, look, let me spank the kid if you're not going to. So that's kind of when I get out of Joe Kelly. But here's where I draw the line with this and the guys that did take the fall, much like Bountygate and everything else. The players that you heard on that tape talking about, you know, where's my money and all this sort of stuff, those guys kept playing. The coaches are the ones that took the fall. You know why? Because they should. You knew what was going on. You knew it was wrong. You can't blame a player for being a player. They're going to get every edge they can. They're going to take every opportunity they can to try to get a win or try to be successful. But if you knew and you let it go on, then I think you should suffer the worst punishment. I really do. Now, the players shouldn't get off scot-free. So I think that's where Joe Kelly and the like are coming into play. You're going to pay a physical price for what you did as players. They'll take care of it. They'll police their own. But I think, you know, punishing the higher-ups, the people that are supposed to be in charge, I think was the exact right thing to do.
I don't have a problem with those guys getting punished. The issue isn't that they got punished. They absolutely should. The issue is the guys that were actually doing it as well did not. And I kind of get the idea of, look, we couldn't get what we needed because the union would have fought us on all of this. Okay, fine. What you could do is you could have taken the World Series away. You could have said, look, this was not a legitimate competition.
Yeah, yeah.
this was not a legitimate competition. This was not played on the up and up. You don't win it. And look, I'm a Dodger fan and have been my whole life. Even I'm sitting here saying, you can't just give it to the Dodgers, because who's to say the Yankees wouldn't have beaten the Astros and then the Yankees would have beat the Dodgers in the World Series? You just don't know. So you can't award it to anybody else, but you sure as blank can take it away from them, because we're seeing it right now, DeMarco. You look at the Astros and then they're not playing well. Jose Altuve looks lost. He can't get the ball out of the infield. He looks lost. That's not an accident. That's not a coincidence. That's because he doesn't know which bleeping pitch is coming. It's a huge deal. And that he got nothing for that is a problem. That he gets to call himself a World Series champion is a huge problem.
I think that's where they made the mistake. They should have taken that World Series away. But does that open a can of worms? You know, I mean,
because
it seemed like every other team, when this happened, when it all broke, it seemed like there were a few other teams that were kind of linked to this. So if you take away a championship from the Astros for cheating, and it was cheating, does it open the door for somebody who was cheated 10 years ago or 20 years ago? You know, like, we knew, and there's proof. We found out that this guy was doing this or this team was doing that, and they caused us to get knocked out of the postseason when we had the best team playing in baseball. Does it open a can of worms?
I think it's a good question. Do you remember, I'm sure you do, do you know the Bobby Thompson, the shot heard around the world, the Giants win the pennant, the Giants pennant. You know that one?
See, that's the one. Yes, that came up. Right, go ahead.
Yeah, it turns out Bobby Thompson knew what pitch was coming, okay? And I hear what you're saying, but this sounds weird, and I think you'll understand this, and I think most people will understand this, but as an athlete, I know you'll get it. There are certain things that you can do in baseball that are, by the letter of the law, cheating, that if you get away with them, you're okay. Whether it's a spitball, whether it's stealing a sign, whether it's not touching a base when you're running around and cutting a corner and nobody sees it, is that cheating? Yeah, but is it part of the game? It is. And that, you kind of have to, you need to police it, you need to catch it, and you need to punish it in the moment, and if you don't, it's gone. That wasn't this. This was not a, hey, we've got something. You're not covering up your sign white. We're going to be able to steal it. This was espionage, electronic espionage. And that's that changed the tilt of the entire series, the entire World Series. And it screwed up people's legacies. That's different than just what's a corked bat.
What's that guy's name, the gambler? Is it Phil Ivey? That was some casinos were going after him for card counting or something he knew, and they considered it cheating, but it wasn't really cheating. Versus what you saw in that movie Casino, where they were working with a partner and there was a thing on the guy's leg that would tap him to tell him what card was coming. That to me is cheating. Yeah, so I agree. So when you start, you know, bringing in outside stuff, or better said, I think Houston just took it too far. I don't think they did anything different, or the desire to get an edge on the other team was any different than any other baseball team that's ever played competitive baseball in the major leagues. They wanted to win. They tried to find an edge. I think they took it too far. Now, it was up to baseball to say, hey, look, we cannot reward you for such. So whether or not you go back and you have these gripes from 15, 20, or maybe 3 years ago, whether or not it opens Pandora's box, I don't care. In the moment, in the present, I cannot reward you. Once I take your jersey off and I see some electronic, you know, thing attached to your shoulder that's telling you when the fastball or the breaking ball is coming, I cannot let you be world champion. That really ruins the sport.
It does. It does. You know, and you know, I guess it's up to us and other baseball fans to kind of remember what happened and call those guys out on it whenever we get an opportunity. Adam Kennedy, 14 years in the major leagues. More importantly, friend of the program. He's going to join us next on the morning show on 710 ESPN. Dodgers get another win last night, this one against the Padres. Joining us right now, talk a little Major League Baseball. 14 years in the big leagues. Friend of the program, Adam Kennedy, joining us. AK, how you feeling this morning?
Good, Travis. How you doing?
Outstanding. You will do a better job at this. Here's what I need you to do. I need you to explain to me and to the listeners and to DeMarco why what the Astros did as cheaters is far more offensive than other types of cheating in baseball, like corking a bat or a spitball.
Yeah, I mean, corking the bat's pretty bad too. Anything you're doing over and over on a daily basis, you know, going home and planning to do this and every single day grabbing that bat out of the rack, you know, it's cork. I mean, there's still some, you know, that's pretty intense of cheating as far as I'm concerned. The what the Astros did, you know, and how cocky they were about everything. You know, I know they didn't take away the World Series. They didn't fine them. The players didn't get suspended. But I'm telling you, those guys are paying for it right now. You can see it watching their games. Altuve's a mess. And you know, he's paying the price right now one way or another. And for me as a player, I'd rather have something stripped away than have to live with that consciousness every day because he cannot perform it how he used to, and it's killing him. Pretty much the entire team, and they're struggling, and they're paying the price right now.
Very, very quickly, Adam. I just want to follow up real quick. Is there any question in your mind, Adam, that the reason Altuve is struggling is because, I mean, just put as simply as possible, he doesn't know what pitch is coming anymore?
More so than that, I mean, look, he obviously knew how to hit his whole life. You know, it got to a point where he was depending on that, obviously, but. For me, more so, his conscience is killing him. He knows that every time he gets out, everybody's saying, he doesn't know what's coming. So even on defense, he made, you know, two or three errors in a game the other day. The whole thing got picked off in Anaheim a couple times. So the whole thing is killing him emotionally, and you know, he's definitely paying a big price.
Just the question, I mean, what is the proper mea culpa for an Astro? I mean, is it even possible for a professional athlete? And you know how tough it is and what you have to go through and the mentality you have to even compete at that level. Can you bring yourself to say the proper I'm sorry if you're an Astro?
Yeah, I guess just say that, you know, but none of them did, even in spring training, you know, when Correa kind of got real defensive against everybody. You know, Bregman wouldn't really, you know, admit to anything, just kind of saying the commissioner made his call. So nobody's really stepped up to the plate and just kind of got, I think maybe Reddick did, a few of the smaller players did, but none of the big boys. And, you know, if you just kind of say you're sorry, we can all kind of move on, but they just refuse to. And, you know, it's kind of one of the reasons, I guess, Joe Kelly kind of still has that bitter feeling to him, which he should probably calm it down a little bit, meaning being he was on the Red Sox. Something going on there. So I think he might be stepping out of line just a little bit too much.
Adam Kennedy joining us here on the morning show. Let's talk a little bit about the Dodgers, AK. And look, if you're a baseball player, you're going to slump. You're going to go through some spots where you're not swinging the bat great. When does it go from just, this is one of those things in baseball where I'm not seeing the ball, I'm not swinging great, to I've got a problem? Because when does Cody Bellinger stop batting .150 and start hitting like Cody Bellinger?
Yeah, soon, hopefully, you know, but the Dodgers keep winning, so it's not as urgent. But eventually, you know, they're going to need a week where they have to average, you know, 7-8 runs to get through. The pitching staff's been so great. You know, they're going to go through a little slump, I'm sure, at some point as well. He had that big double down the left field line last night. I know he didn't smoke it, but that's always a good sign. I think he's on the plate a little bit too much. When you're on the plate that much, you kind of subconsciously kind of go into pull mode. If I was him, I'd just back off a little bit. But he's an MVP talent, obviously, and eventually he'll be fine.
You know, I'm looking over your career stats, and it's impossible to go game by game because there's just so many. But can you recall your lowest point when you were?
Don't do that.
This is fun. You know why? This is fun because it's not my numbers. Yeah, it was good stuff. But when you were at your lowest point, when it just wasn't clicking at the plate, and what did it feel like when you were going through it, and how did you get out of it, and what did it feel like when you were finally, when you finally started to find your stroke again?
Yeah, you know, if you're in top physical shape, right, you have career numbers, eventually it's going to click for you, you know, and it takes just one at bat, really. When you're feeling good, and when you are struggling, everything's kind of moving, the ball's moving a little too fast, you know, you're taking some strikes that you would normally swing at, but honestly, all it takes is one at bat, one day for everything to kind of click, you get on a roll. And for the rest of the season, you get hot.
Adam, how much pressure is on Dave Roberts? We were talking about this a little bit earlier. I mean, if you're a manager, you can't ask for much more than what he's been given. You got a lights out bullpen. That there is no bad choice there. You've got a starting rotation where arguably Clayton Kershaw is your third or fourth best option, which is crazy to say out loud. You've got a roster that's got a couple of MVPs in it, in Betts and Bellinger. If it doesn't happen, does it land on him?
Well, it's going to have to eventually, but he's great, and he's a great manager for those guys. Yeah, the only issue would be if they don't win a World Series in the next few years, you know, people are going to be asking for a change, and that would be the only reason to move off of Dave Roberts. But he's great. He seems to have a great relationship with those players. They seem to respect him. But with the Dodgers, you know you're still getting a lot of influence from the front office, so he's kind of been a good funneling source for them and kind of relaying that to the players. So, yeah, I mean, he's great. The only reason to make a change with them would be if people were calling for a change after not winning in these next few years. So baseball,
you know, I've never been in this position before. Any of my championship teams, I mean, we weren't the favorite going into the year. And, you know, I wouldn't say it's a surprise or we were Cinderella, but it was different defending than it was, you know, going for the first one. So when you talk about the Dodgers and it's, you know, World Series or bust, baseball is hard enough, like you said. Why would you put more pressure on yourself to call it a World Series or bust type season?
Yeah, I mean, that's just us doing that and seeing them play so well and over the last, you know, seven years where they, you know, dominated the division. And they're getting so close, you know, especially in L.A., you know, people want the big wins now. So I don't know. You know, if I'm running an organization, it would be exactly like the Dodgers. You give yourself a chance to win every year, and eventually it's going to pop for you. But you just it's tough to, you know, say they're not succeeding when they've been so great over this last, I guess, you know, 7-8 year run now. It's been pretty impressive. And if you look at the prospect and how they're ranked, their minor league system, they're still in the top five. You know, their organization has run great. Things don't seem to be tailing off here. Just, they keep finding players. I mean, Chris Taylor, Muncy, these guys are really valuable. Think about how valuable Chris Taylor is. You know, you can't have a great team without a good shortstop. And he's able to, you know, come in for Seager. Seager just hasn't been reliable health-wise. And Taylor, them to have Taylor, is he's really an underrated player. Even when he doesn't hit, being able to play short in center field is pretty impressive.
Adam Kennedy joining us here on the morning show. Adam, you spent a long time as a player in the major leagues, played with and against some really phenomenal players. Is Mike Trout the best baseball player you've ever seen?
He's the best player ever. And I think, you know, this last couple weeks has kind of solidified that. He's definitely the best baseball player that's ever lived. And I think if anybody's going to argue that, they're just trying to start a first sake of argument because it's really not even that close, I don't think.
Does environment factor into you? Like where he is, what team he's on? I mean, could he be this good anywhere or is it just here?
Absolutely anywhere. I mean, just, you know, I watch him on a nightly basis and it's the same thing over and over again. And I think people even kind of get bored with it sometimes. He makes it look so easy. He makes it look effortlessly, and it's pretty impressive. There's no reason he wouldn't be able to do it anywhere. Hopefully he gets the chance to make a little playoff run, you know, because if he was on that big stage year after year, the legend of Mike Trout would just continue to grow, and he deserves that.
I'm glad to hear you say that because I've been saying that for a couple of years now. I've never seen anything like this. Albert Pujols is a great player. Barry Bonds, Ken Griffey Jr. These guys were phenomenal players, but this just feels different, AK. There's nothing on a baseball field that not only is he not very good at, but he might not be the very best at, whether it's hitting for power or speed, defensive play. I mean, he's just at an elite level across the board.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I was telling my buddy the other day, every at bat, I feel like I was scratching and clawing for a bloop single. And you watch him, and it's just the lack of pressure that he stands at the plate with and how he hits. It's a joy to watch. I mean, we're all lucky in Southern California to be able to see it on a daily basis.
Adam Kennedy, 14 years in the big leagues, friend of the morning show. Adam, always a pleasure. Thanks a bunch.
All right, you guys. I appreciate it.
See you, man.
All right, we'll talk to you again. There you go. I mean, DeMarco, Adam Kennedy spent 14 years in the major leagues. That's a hell of a career, right? 14 years at the highest level of your sport. And he's saying Mike Trout is the greatest baseball player that's ever lived. That means something.
How fast he said it means something. Yeah. No hemming and hawing. No thinking about it. Best player ever, period. That says a lot.
All right. You know what? Let's do something like that with football. That's coming up next on the morning show on 710 ESPN. Dodgers get another win last night, this one against the Padres. Joining us right now to talk a little Major League Baseball, 14 years in the big leagues, friend of the program, Adam Kennedy, joining us. Hey, Kay, how you feeling this morning?
Good, Travis. How you doing?
Outstanding. You will do a better job at this. Here's what I need you to do. I need you to explain to me and to the listeners and to DeMarco why what the Astros did as cheaters is far more offensive than other types of cheating in baseball, like corking a bat or a spitball.
Yeah, I mean, corking the bat's pretty bad too. Anything you're doing over and over on a daily basis, you know, going home and planning to do this and every single day grabbing that bat out of the rack, you know, it's cork. I mean, there's still some, you know, that's pretty intense of cheating as far as I'm concerned. The what the Astros did, you know, and how cocky they were about everything, you know, I know they didn't take away the World Series. They didn't fine them. The players didn't get suspended, but I'm telling you, those guys are paying for it right now. You can see it watching their games. Altuve's a mess, and you know, he's paying the price right now one way or another. And for me as a player, I'd rather have something stripped away than have to live with that consciousness every day, because he cannot perform it how he used to, and it's killing him, pretty much the entire team. And they're struggling, and they're paying the price right now.
Very, very quickly, Adam, before DeMarco, I just want to follow up real quick. Is there any question in your mind, Adam, that the reason Altuve is struggling is because, I mean, just put as simply as possible, he doesn't know what pitch is coming anymore?
More so than that, I mean, look, he obviously knew how to hit his whole life. You know, it got to a point where he was depending on that, obviously. But for me, more so, his conscience is killing him. He knows that every time he gets out, everybody's saying, he doesn't know what's coming. So even on defense, he made, you know, two or three errors in a game the other day. The whole thing got picked off in Anaheim a couple times. So the whole thing is killing him emotionally, and you know, he's definitely paying a big price.
Just the question, I mean, what is the proper mea culpa for an Astro? I mean, is it even possible for a professional athlete? And you know how tough it is and what you have to go through and the mentality you have to even compete at that level. Can you bring yourself to say the proper I'm sorry if you're an Astro?
Yeah, I guess just say that, you know, but none of them did, even in spring training, you know, when Correa kind of got real defensive against everybody, you know, Bregman wouldn't really, you know, admit to anything, just kind of saying the commissioner made his call. So nobody's really stepped up to the plate and just kind of got, I think maybe Reddick did, a few of the smaller players did, but none of the big boys. And, you know, if you just kind of say you're sorry, we can all kind of move on, but they just refuse to. And, you know, it's kind of one of the reasons, I guess, Joe Kelly kind of still has that bitter feeling to him, which he should probably calm it down a little bit, meaning being he was on the Red Sox. So I think he might be stepping out of line just a little bit too much.
Adam Kennedy joining us here on the morning show. Let's talk a little bit about the Dodgers, AK. And look, if you're a baseball player, you're going to slump. You're going to go through some spots where you're not swinging the bat great. When does it go from just, this is one of those things in baseball where I'm not seeing the ball, I'm not swinging great, to I've got a problem? Because when does Cody Bellinger stop batting .150 and start hitting like Cody Bellinger?
Yeah, soon, hopefully, you know, but the Dodgers keep winning, so it's not as urgent. But eventually, you know, they're going to need a week where they have to average, you know, 7-8 runs to get through. The pitching staff's been so great. You know, they're going to go through a little slump, I'm sure, at some point as well. He had that big double down the left field line last night. I know he didn't smoke it, but that's always a good sign. I think he's on the plate a little bit too much. when you're on the plate that much, you kind of subconsciously kind of go into pull mode. If I was him, I'd just back off a little bit. But he's an MVP talent, obviously, and eventually he'll be fine.
You know, I'm looking over your career stats, and it's impossible to go game by game because there's just so many. But can you recall your lowest point when you were?
Don't do that.
This is fun. You know why this is fun? Because it's not my numbers. Yeah, it was good stuff. But when you were at your lowest point, when it just wasn't clicking at the plate, and what did it feel like when you were going through it, and how did you get out of it, and what did it feel like when you were finally when you finally started to find your stroke again?
Yeah, you know, if you're in good, if you're in top physical shape, right, you have, and you have career numbers, eventually it's going to click for you, you know, and it takes just one at bat, really. When you're feeling good, and you're, when you are struggling, everything's kind of moving, the ball's moving a little too fast, you know, you're taking some strikes that you would normally swing at, but honestly, all it takes is one at bat, one day for everything to kind of click, you get on a roll. And for the rest of the season, you get hot.
Adam, how much pressure is on Dave Roberts? We were talking about this a little bit earlier. I mean, if you're a manager, you can't ask for much more than what he's been given. You got a lights out bullpen. That there is no bad choice there. You've got a starting rotation where arguably Clayton Kershaw is your third or fourth best option, which is crazy to say out loud. You've got a roster that's got a couple of MVPs in it, in Betts and Bellinger. If it doesn't happen, does it land on him?
Well, it's going to have to eventually, but he's great, and he's a great manager for those guys. Yeah, the only issue would be if they don't win a World Series in the next few years. You know, people are going to be asking for a change, and that would be the only reason to move off of Dave Roberts. But he's great. He seems to have a great relationship with those players. They seem to respect him. But with the Dodgers, you know, you're still getting a lot of influence from the front office. So he's kind of been a good funneling source for them and kind of relaying that to the players. So, yeah, I mean, he's great. The only reason to make a change with them would be if people were calling for a change after not winning in these next few years. So baseball,
you know, I've never been in this position before. Any of my championship teams, I mean, we weren't the favorite going into the year. And, you know, I wouldn't say it's a surprise or we were Cinderella, but it was different defending than it was, you know, going for the first one. So when you talk about the Dodgers and it's, you know, World Series or bust, baseball is hard enough, like you said. Why would you put more pressure on yourself to call it a World Series or bust type season?
Yeah, I mean, that's just us doing that and seeing them play so well and over the last, you know, seven years where they, you know, dominated the division. And they're getting so close, you know, especially in L.A., you know, people want the big wins now. So I don't know, you know, if I'm running an organization, it would be exactly like the Dodgers. You give yourself a chance to win every year, and eventually it's going to pop for you. But you just it's tough to you know, say they're not succeeding when they've been so great over this last, I guess, you know, 7-8 year run now. It's been pretty impressive. And if you look at the prospect, and how they're ranked, their minor league system, they're still in the top five. You know, their organization has run great. Things don't seem to be tailing off here. Just, they keep finding players. I mean, Chris Taylor, Muncy, these guys are really valuable. Think about how valuable Chris Taylor is. You know, you can't have a great team without a good shortstop. And he's able to, you know, come in for Seager. Seager just hasn't been reliable health-wise. And Taylor, he's really an underrated player. Even when he doesn't hit, being able to play short and center field, pretty impressive.
Adam Kennedy joining us here on the morning show. Adam, you spent a long time as a player in the major leagues, played with and against some really phenomenal players. Is Mike Trout the best baseball player you've ever seen?
He's the best player ever. And I think, you know, this last couple weeks has kind of solidified that. He's definitely the best baseball player that's ever lived. And I think if anybody's going to argue that, they're just trying to start a first sake of argument because it's really not even that close, I don't think.
Does environment factor into you? Like where he is, what team he's on? I mean, could he be this good anywhere or is it just here?
Absolutely anywhere. I mean, just, you know, I watch him on a nightly basis and it's the same thing over and over again. And I think people even kind of get bored with this sometimes. He makes it look so easy. He makes it look effortlessly, and it's pretty impressive. There's no reason he wouldn't be able to do it anywhere. Hopefully he gets the chance to make a little playoff run, you know, because if he was on that big stage year after year, the legend of Mike Trout would just continue to grow, and he deserves that.
I'm glad to hear you say that, because I've been saying that for a couple of years now. I've never seen anything like this. Albert Pujols is a great player. Barry Bonds, Ken Griffey Jr. These guys were phenomenal players, but this just feels different, AK. There's nothing on a baseball field that not only is he not very good at, but he might not be the very best at, whether it's hitting for power or speed, defensive play. He's just at an elite level across the board.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I was telling my buddy the other day, every at bat, I feel like I was scratching and clawing for a bloop single. And you watch him, and it's just the lack of pressure that he stands at the plate with, and how he hits it's a joy to watch. I mean, we're all lucky in Southern California to be able to see it on a daily basis.
Adam Kennedy, 14 years in the big leagues, friend of the morning show. Adam, always a pleasure. Thanks a bunch.
All right, you guys, I appreciate it.
See you, man.
All right, we'll talk to you again. There you go. I mean, DeMarco, Adam Kennedy spent 14 years in the major leagues. That's a hell of a career, right? 14 years at the highest level of your sport. And he's saying Mike Trout is the greatest baseball player that's ever lived. That means something.
How fast he said it means something. Yeah.
Yeah.
No hemming and hawing. No thinking about it. Best player ever, period. That says a lot.
All right. You know what? Let's do something like that with football. That's coming up next on The Morning Show on 710 ESPN. All right, so the Lakers have a early morning game. About 10:30 is going to be the tip. Alan Sliwa, Michael Thompson. I'll have your pregame show coming up next in just a little bit. And, fellas, before we get into the Lakers and what we might expect today, what we might look for in that first round, Michael, I want to give you the floor to make a case for why Willie Mays or Barry Bonds is the best baseball player ever. I know you have thoughts.
Yeah, I'm never going to doubt Trump's Hall of Fame credentials. Obviously, he's a great player. He's going to go down as one of the best we've ever seen. But to say, like Adam Kennedy was saying, he's the best hands down, there's no discussion, there's no doubt about it. I don't get it, because to me, the greatest ever – if he was the greatest ever, he'd be hitting 350, 50 home runs, 150 RBIs. And I don't want to hear about he's playing for not playing for the Dodgers or for the Yankees or some team like that. You put those kind of numbers up no matter what if you're considered the greatest ever. And I grew up, see, I'm older than you. I've seen Ricky Henderson in his prime, Willie Mays in his prime, Hank Aaron, Roberto Clemente. And those guys did it all on both ends of the field, just like Trout does. But they put up bigger numbers in an era that was harder to hit in, because you had bigger stadiums, you had canyons to hit out of. But yet you people in your era, your generation, say he's the greatest ever, when you guys didn't see those past guys playing in the 60s and 70s and 80s.
Okay,
I don't
hold
get
on.
It.
Number one, I think of all the players that I've seen, Ricky Henderson is the closest to Mike Trout because of all the reasons that you just said.
The ones you've seen, that's right.
I haven't seen Willie Mays before my time. I didn't see him.
Yeah.
But to your point about the numbers, Mike Trout's numbers are better than all of these guys at this point in his career, with the exception of the batting average. And that's changed dramatically, Michael. If he decided he didn't want to strike out anymore, his average would skyrocket, but he would give up some home runs and some other things. The game has just changed. Just like the NBA, the three-point shot has changed. The approach of hitters has changed. Nobody tries to bat like Rod Carew and Tony Gwynn anymore. They just don't do it. There's no shame.
You mean everybody's
striking out.
Everybody's just swinging uppercuts trying to hit home runs? That's it?
Yeah, basically. Yeah, that's kind of the way that it goes. I have no doubt that Trout would be able to make the transition to an average guy if that's what he wanted to do.
Yeah, I mean, is he the greatest defensive outfielder you've ever seen?
He's up there.
Does he have the biggest arm you've ever seen?
Now, that's one of the things that he is not a high, high level. But neither was Bonds. Neither was Ricky Henderson. Those guys didn't throw either.
Mm-hmm. Well, how come Bonds could hit for average and power?
Yeah, well, Mike Trout for the modern era does.
Is that DeMarco laughing?
I love Michael Thompson.
DeMarco knows I'm right. And DeMarco, how could you sit there talking about the greatest football players ever and you don't mention Deion, who was a three-way threat? What other player you name of the greats who was a three-way threat like Deion?
Travis
offense, defense, and special teams.
I 100% agreed. I was just trying to give some love to the O-linemen.
Well, yeah, you got to do that, yes, of course.
Sometimes they get overlooked.
I mean,
sometimes the best guy on the team is the O-linemen, but – that doesn't show up the next day in the stat column.
And let me ask you, too, since you're here, Mr. Line Man, you know what the line is all about. Here's my theory about old linemen, which I don't understand, DeMarco. You got to explain it to me. When you've got edge rushers like Miles Garrett and Von Miller and these athletes on the edges coming around the edge to get to these quarterbacks, why do you have a fat, slow guy out there who's 380 pounds trying to move his feet to stay with these speed merchants on the outside? That's like say, putting Shaq on Kyrie Irving in the open court.
Well,
you know what I mean?
Okay, look, if I got a fat, slow guy at left tackle and I got to throw the ball, I lost anyway. Against those guys.
But
you know what I mean?
But I see them get beat around the edge because they're not moving their feet quick enough.
They can't move their feet.
Well, then why would you put someone there who's equally as quick to deal with the Miles Garretts?
Believe me, if you could get away from it, you could. But sometimes the game dictates that, hey, look, I got to throw the football in Denver versus Von Miller, and let's just hold our breath and pray we can get the ball off. Sometimes you have to. There's no way around it.
Yeah,
they know it.
Yeah.
Aaron Donald knows it. When you're facing Aaron Donald, right, and you're facing a team that's bad offensively and the play comes in late and he looks up and he sees the play clock is down to 4 or 5, you know, 3, 2, 1. Well, the ball's going to be snapped on one. You've got no chance. You might as well call timeout. If you run the ball, if you run that play, then that's your fault if Aaron Donald takes your quarterback's head off. So sometimes you just can't get away from it.
By the way, did you guys see Aaron Donald on Hard Knocks the other night with his shirt off?
Jesus.
It's a joke. That's
how I used to look.
I put a sweater on when I saw that. Yeah. I put more clothes on.
Yeah, I went back to the freezer and got more ice cream on it. What's the point? If this doesn't matter at all.
By the way, how weird is Hard Knocks this year, huh?
How weird is everything this year? Yeah. I mean, it add Hard Knocks to the list. It's all weird. But, Alan, what are we going to see today?
Don't talk about this game. What are you talking about? You talk about this game today, Travis.
Michael,
what are
we going to do?
Throwaway game.
We got a pregame show for an hour and 15 minutes.
Yeah, we're going to talk.
1 minute with
and
Travis.
We're
going to
talk about,
do?
And we're going to talk about Portland and the Lakers in round one. That's what we're going to talk about. We don't want to talk about the Kings, Lakers. Let's just talk. Let's get back to
it. Does anybody play?
Let's get back to Hard Knocks. I want to talk to DeMarco Farr while he's here. I want to know, DeMarco, how are these guys going to play football when they're taking all these precautions?
Well, you're going to have to. I mean, everybody's going through the same thing. Did you see the new helmet?
Yeah.
That they're going to put out there with the mask that almost covers your entire face?
I heard they fog up.
Yeah, they do.
Of course it does.
Every visor fogs up. But this is going to be tough to breathe. But it's either that or a good chance or a better chance you actually catch this thing if it's out on the field with you. And there's almost a guarantee it's going to be on the field with you at some point. So I'd rather be safe than anything.
You think there'll be an NFL season this fall?
Yeah, I think the NFL is going to start. Now, if they have like a Marlins-type outbreak, it could change. But definitely, they're going ahead with the season, no doubt.
How are they
going
to make these guys go home after practice and after games and stay isolated from the general public?
You know, it's possible. It is. We did it in 99 when we won our championship. We, you know, our leadership was so strong that, look, if your leaders are going home, if they're calling you from the house, hey, what's up? Just checking on you. Where are you at? I'm at the house hanging out with the kids. If your leadership is doing it, then your young guys have a tendency to follow. Now, it's up to the coach to make sure you keep the right guys on your roster, guys that you can trust, because all it takes is one guy and then the whole comes tumbling down.
And we've seen it in baseball, right? We've seen some guys leave their teams, not follow protocols on there. And I'd like to think that people will do the right thing for the right reasons, but human nature prevails. Guys are going to want what they want. They're going to go looking for it, whatever it might be. It's going to be really, really difficult.
Well, Travis, it might also just show, I mean, take baseball as an example. Use NBA as an example, but you're only going to hurt your own league, and at least – football has got a chance to see what some of the other sports are doing, some of the good, some of the bad. So they might, and Michael, you just mentioned it, how weird was it watching Hard Knocks? We're watching Sean McVay out in a parking lot trying to figure out where they're going to put seats because of social distancing. I mean, the whole thing is so incredibly weird, but maybe by the time football starts, all these guys understand if we got any shot playing this season, we got to follow these protocols.
Travis, did you really want to talk about this Kings-Lakers game?
No, I want to talk about the Lakers.
I'm offended.
I don't want to talk about this game.
Travis, I'm offended. The NBA moved this game down to 10:30. How is this not a primetime game at 6 o'clock? Unbelievable.
Well, Alan, I know that you've got an hour and a half coming up with Michael where he doesn't want to talk about the game. So I'm feeling your pain right now. I understand that. What about the bubble in general, though, Michael? Is it working better than you thought? Is this about what you thought it would look like when we went into it? Is it a little bit less? What are your thoughts on the bubble generally?
Yeah, guys, you know, this has worked so well that let's say this virus is still with us going into the late fall. They're talking about having four bubbles next year. You heard mm-hmm. about that, right?
Mm-hmm.
New York, Dallas, Orlando, and possibly Vegas or possibly L.A. So this is it's worked so well here. This is good news for the NBA that they looks like they even as they get make more progress with treating this virus, it looks like they'll be able to start the season in December and be able to keep guys relatively healthy. So that's good news that this has worked so well, even better than expected in Orlando, as Adam Silver said.
And Travis, just to hit on that, baseball might be taking a page from this if they get to October. You guys saw that kind of concept out there where this 16 teams that they're going to have this postseason, they'll have these potentially three hubs. So the NBA has essentially been a little bit of a blueprint of what maybe sports goes to.
And it's not an accident that they've got the best commissioner, that he was more proactive than everybody else and that they're having the most success. It is not a coincidence. The game of the year, the Kings and the Lakers. Pre-game show coming up next.